Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal. And I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
So that went from one of the most bitter nights of being an Oilers fan in the last forever to one of the best nights to be an Oilers fan. And if we're completely honest, it comes down to one player, Connor McDavid, essentially willing his team to victory. Like, just in a way that I have never seen, even from him, as great a player as he is, this was the biggest expression of his maturity as a leader, as a captain, and as a superstar in the NHL, that game tonight. He absolutely took over that game, Bruce, and he won it for his team. And
he tied it for them. You know, the bum was on the bench when they scored the winning goal. I don't know what everybody's raving about McDavid for. I mean, he had nothing to do with that game winner. Of course, all he did was have 4 points up until then and set a new NHL record for scoring 9 points on his team's first 9 goals. Broke a 32-year-old record held by Adam Oates.
So, Bruce, that is a glorious individual achievement, yep. But something of a dubious team achievement.
Right.
So, and McDavid himself alluded to that. What did he say after the game?
That's my good thing was McDavid's quote in the post game. And it's actually, I don't have a quote, but I'll paraphrase it. And he says, why are we talking about that? It's kind of a double-edged sword. Now that he said, the boys scored the winner while I was on the bench. Now we don't ever have to talk about that again. Like, he was very reluctant because he could see the downside to the general talk of people referring to the Oilers as a one-man team. And, I mean, there's certainly a case can be made, holy moly. But did he ever take that game over by the bootstraps, eh? And just elevated his game, and the Jets could not match him.
No, they don't have anyone. They are a very good team, and they've got some good players. Yeah. But he was just in another league. And as should happen, and as will happen on this Oilers team as it develops, other players started to follow his lead and to just pick up their own skating and to start to do a little bit more. Draisaitl started to go a little faster. Klefbom was flying out there, and other players really took off. Darnell Nurse. So that's your good thing. This is, of course, our two good things, two bad things, and two stats podcast.
Yeah.
My good thing, Bruce, was Jesse Puljujärvi, Bruce, was trusted enough by the coach to be out there in the last minute of a tie hockey game. Mm-hmm. He was out for the last 60 seconds of that game, and he had earned that, of course, by being maybe the Oilers' second or third best, fourth best forward, certainly in the top six. I mean, Ty Ratty was strong. Nugent Hopkins was strong. Draisaitl came off it. Puljujärvi came alive in the third period. And what a great sign that is. And it's good that the coach had enough faith in him. I thought we might even see him in the overtime. We didn't see that, but nonetheless, it was fantastic to see that kind of trust placed in this player, because I think he's a really fine hockey player, and it's taken him a while to develop, and people have been very frustrated by his lack of playing time in the top two lines. Now, you could say, well, maybe McClellan's handled him brilliantly and he's finally ready, or you can say, well, maybe McClellan's botched it, his development, and it's hard for us to know from the outside what's going on, but nonetheless, it was good to see him in that position, and that was a great goal, fundamental goal that he scored, just had his stick on the ice. Nothing flashy, stick on the ice, planted on the ice, and deflected in off a great feed by Ryan Nugent Hopkins.
Take that in the big body to the net front and look for pucks and try and get your stick on them. And that's what he did. And Nuge certainly fired an excellent shot pass where he could tip it, but give the kid credit. He was in the right spot, and he tipped her home. That was his one shift, I think. Like, he played just over a minute with McDavid and scored a goal together with him, because, of course, McDavid had the second assist on that play. But he did get elevated in the lineup as when Coach McClellan finally switched the wingers around, probably midway in the second period, eh? That Draisaitl and Strom switched lines.
Well, you're getting to my bad thing now, Bruce. Why don't I just jump into that?
Okay, why don't we go ahead and you can talk about your bad thing.
Well, it's McClellan's stubbornness. Why did it take him till now to realize that this second line? There was a goal. The goal against Draisaitl was again way out of position.
Got sucked
wrong
in.
Side of the puck. Mm-hmm. Lucic wasn't a culprit. I believe Yamamoto, I can't remember what mistake he made exactly, but and Betting and Garrison, of course. Why did it take McClellan this long? Like, we've seen the second line through the preseason and the first few games. It has shown nothing. And it's been getting scored on consistently. I don't know what their minus mark, plus minus on the season is, but they've just been getting scored on. They've been letting in ugly goals. And finally, they're down 4-1. And people were, the internet was exploding with calls for to fire McClellan, including maybe a tweet or two from me.
I wasn't on Twitter this game. When I sprayed the games myself, I pretty got dialed in, and I might put a comment or two between periods, but I had an idea that people probably weren't too happy.
No, and this is what they were unhappy with. Like, and you're going to get to the Garrison thing, but people were just so unhappy with the way McClellan's been handling the team and how dispirited, just lacking in spirit and effort, hustle, grit, whatever you want to call it, the Oilers displayed until they absolutely on a dime almost, led by McDavid, turned this game around. So that's the bad thing, is the coach's stubbornness, but maybe, Bruce, he's turning over a new leaf.
I'll flip that on his ear, and I'll say give him a little bit of credit for at least recognizing what happened today and actually making a transition in-game, and it worked. Those lines didn't really score, but they were way better. I mean, Draisaitl was a whole new player when they put him on a different line there with Kajula and Koljärvi, two guys that can skate.
It was astonishing, eh? It really was. It was such an eye-opener. Suddenly he came alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was by far the best, most determined and committed that he's looked. And I thought he picked up his 200-foot game, you know, not just in the attacking zone. And, of course, he got two more points tonight on the power play. So he hasn't scored at even strength, and he's been a minus player in every game, Leon. But there were some very encouraging signs there tonight. And I thought Strome looked pretty good with Lucic and Yamamoto. I thought that line was fine.
They had three lines, finally, three lines that were working, three lines that make sense. Mm-hmm. And the other good thing I liked in regards to Puljujärvi, just to get back to that for a second, is that Draisaitl was actually looking for him on the ice. Like, Leon's very – he knows who he likes to pass to and he knows who he doesn't like to pass to. And he tried to set up. It didn't work out. Puljujärvi fell right on his face. But he tried to set up Puljujärvi on a one-timer. So to me, that was an indication that Draisaitl's ready to start playing with this player, passing to him, working with Puljujärvi, and this could actually be a thing. So, yeah. So Bruce, what is your bad thing?
Well, you know, I'm going to have to put the goat horns on Jason Garrison for a dreadful first 10 minutes of the first period. His pairing with Matt Benning, they absolutely got owned by Winnipeg's third line with Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp, and who was the third guy? Anyway, they were all over him. And he just couldn't handle big Adam Lowry. And on the first goal, he kind of got caught betwixt and between. Lowry came out from below the goal line, and he didn't close the gap down. He was trying to defend against a pass that was never coming, and Lowry just walked right in front and shoved her home. The second one, though, like, Benning actually made a nice play to get Garrison the puck in the corner. He got the puck with time to look up and make a pass, and he did the exact same thing in the Rangers game, the very same thing early in the game, clean look to get out, and he made a terrible pass right to the other team. They kept the puck, and that time they didn't score. Tonight they did score, and in fact it was his man, Lowry, who wound up getting the puck up, getting a shot, and then getting a second shot while Garrison was just completely unable to handle him. So I will in Garrison's, well, I don't know, defense. In Garrison's offense, he did make a critical play on the game-tying goal with a good play at the blue line to keep the puck in the cycle alive on Puljujärvi's tying goal. So I got to give him a plus for that, but that's after several minuses in the early going. And honestly, I don't see a third pairing that we can trust at this moment.
Bruce, it isn't, and they shouldn't be the third pairing. I don't know why he took Bouchard out. They just won a game. Bouchard had been playing consistently well three games in a row. Why would you take him out? What, like, you know, it's one of the truisms of coaching is you stick with the winning lineup. And why move Bouchard out? Why? I don't know. I've this whole Garrison thing, I don't get it. I haven't gotten it from the start. He looks too slow to me. He doesn't look like he can keep up at the NHL level. I saw nothing tonight that made me think anything but that. Kevin Gravel looked like a better player. Gravel and Bouchard should be the third pairing right now.
It's one thing being slow. It's another thing when your team works to gain possession of the puck and they get it to you with time and space and you immediately turn it over to the other team. He's done that just in egregious fashion, two games in a row. You know, on a long cycle, when you finally get the puck to the veteran, okay, you expect the veteran to get the darn thing out, maybe get it, lob it into the other team's zone and get the hell off the ice at that point because they've been out there for a while. And instead, straight to the other team, just brutal. So that's can't last.
This is a team that struggles to move the puck consistently from defense to forwards. You can't have two guys, you know, hand grenade one and landmine two on your third pairing that's just going to explode in your face. Stretch the analogy or whatever that was. And listen, Bouchard can move the puck. Yeah. And Kevin Gravel looked like he's mobile. He can play a bit. Like, I don't know why. Like, he just didn't seem to get any chance at all.
It's early.
Preseason.
They can still change things up. I mean, obviously, they wanted to take a good look at Garrison. He did more things right than wrong to earn the contract in their eyes. But now we're starting to see. I mean, that the one thing you can have is just brutal mistakes from that position. You expect the guy to get beat once in a while. That's going to happen. Anyway, he had a tough time of it tonight. You know, part of the problem there is he only played under 9 minutes because he quickly lost the trust of his coach. And now in a 62-minute game, you're playing the hell out of your top four guys, right? You've got four guys that are way up over 22 and a half minutes. Three of them over 24 minutes.
All right, let's go to our stats of the night. And Bruce, let's go to your stat line first. What's your stat of the night?
My stat, it's actually an entire line of stats, and this is Darnell Nurse, who caught my eye in the early going as being the most noticeable positive Edmonton defenseman. I better throw in that word positive. I noticed a few of the other defensemen in the early going. But this is Darnell Nurse's stat line from the event summary. One goal, 1 point. Of course, that was a game winner on a very nice sort of slow motion, slow down, speed up, and go through the two waving stick checks from the offensive-minded forwards and take advantage of that and beat the goalie with a nice shot. Like, that was the surprising part.
Bruce, that was a Serge Savard special.
Yeah. Sort of. It took him 10, 12 seconds to get off there. Doug Harvey, you know, wasn't proud of that goal. Anyway, here's the stats. 27 minutes, 44 seconds. 27 minutes, almost 28 minutes on 31 shifts, right? Both team highs. He played 233 on the penalty kill, 25-11 at even strength, a team high. He took five shots on goal to lead the team, tied with Ty Ratty. Three that were blocked, four that missed the net. 12 shot attempts from Darnell Nurse. And this is including 0-0-0 on the power play, 12 shot attempts. And, I mean, he's kind of an indiscriminate shooter. And he's a guy that, you know, he takes the path of direct path to the net, right? And he either passes to the guy in front of the net or he shoots on the net himself. He doesn't see the trailer and he doesn't see some of the other options. He kind of gets tunnel vision. But, hell, 12 shot attempts, one hit, two giveaways, and just crooked numbers all across his, like he was very involved, skated miles in that game. I'd love to see the odometer on Nurse in that game. And while he was on the ice, the Oilers attempted 24 shots for 17 against in 24 minutes at 5-on-5. So the ice was tilted in favor of the Oilers, and he was a big driver of it.
So, Bruce, his scoring chance contributions, he contributed to three scoring chances and made just a minor mistake on one grade A chance against. So that's really good for a defenseman. So, yeah, that's a heck of a game for a defenseman to have and came just at the nick of time. I mean, the narrative that was bubbling up on Nurse, and I heard Bob Stauffer talking about it on Cheddon, was this idea that defensive defensemen have got to – make up their mind to be defensive defensemen and get it out of their heads to rush the puck so much. And, you know, if that's what you're going to be, you got to master it and be really good at it. And I think you mentioned Nurse's name in that context. So good thing that Darnell Nurse wasn't listening to Bob on that one, because that was one heck of a rush. And I get maybe them wanting him to simplify his game, but it's a tough one because he is really so effective rushing the puck out of the zone. And they can really rely on that. So, I mean, I don't mind him rushing the puck. The key for Darnell Nurse is to play strong defensively.
Mm-hmm.
How about rush the puck and play strong defensively?
Right.
Well, you don't have to give up rushing the puck.
Nope.
You just have to make sure you shut down the other team on the attack. And that's what he did that game.
He too had a encouraging post game quote where he basically discussed that they were praising him about his goal, and he was saying, "Well, you take the chances when you're there, but my primary job is to keep the puck out of my net." I'm going, "Yeah, you're right," and that's a good attitude to have, Darnell, and I approve.
Okay, my stat, Bruce, is a rather remarkable stat. So the Oilers had 18 grade A scoring chances, which is last year they averaged about 8 a game. They absolutely took over this game. Let me just look here what happened in the last part of the game. It was
10-1 in the third period.
10-1, and then they had they had 15-1 starting in the last 10 minutes into the second period, Bruce. From the 10-minute mark of the second period, the Oilers outchanced them 15-1 in grade A chances, Winnipeg. So, but Connor McDavid, he averaged last year, in his first three seasons, he's been very consistent. He's had about 3.2 major contributions to grade A scoring chances per game. And that means a shot or a pass into or in the slot area, right into the inner slot area that leads to a grade A chance. Mm-hmm. So he averages about 3.2 a game, 3.3, 3.4 in there. That includes the power play. So he had 10 this game. 10. 10. So I think he should get a grade. I'm not telling you how to give him a mark, Bruce, but I would give him. I'm feeling a 10.
Number 10 there a couple of times. I thought
10.
He you know, there was a few more. Like there was a couple of times where he was stymied by great defensive plays by Trouba or Morrissey, who he saw a steady diet of all night. Winnipeg's top two defensemen. At least that were dressed for this game without Bufflin. He had one in overtime that was on a tee for Draisaitl in the slot, and it just caught the very back edge of the defenseman's skate and bounced away. And, you know, he was making the plays, and sometimes the puck would get through and sometimes it wouldn't because, you know, the other team. But he was giving the Winnipeg defense crew all they could handle and more than they could handle for most of that game.
Yeah. All right, Bruce. I'm not telling you how to grade McDavid, but Bo Derek.
I'm somewhere between 9 and 10. I think I promise you he's getting at least a 9. And last year I gave him a 10 on game one of the season. It didn't work out so well immediately thereafter. So superstition may rear its ugly head here.
All right. Hey, let's leave it there. You got work to do, and we've been
fun work. On a big win like that, that's a huge confidence builder for the team. Like, it's not just 2 points. That's a big one to have under your belt.
Okay, let's go there then. Let's deal with one last thing then. Sure. We're going to go off script and deal with one last thing. Is this a turning point for the Oilers or not, Bruce McCurdy?
Turning point? Well, I think it's one that, like I say, it's a confidence builder for the team. That was the first Western opponent. It was a conference finalist from last year in their own barn where they'd won 11 straight games. And the bounces and the luck and a couple of the calls, frankly, were going against them. That call on Lucic was a joke.
Terrible.
They overcame more than a little adversity tonight. And that's the sort of thing that can go in the memory bank a little bit, you know. And the team can be down in another game. The whole team goes, well, we got Connor on our bench, you know. We always got a chance. And tonight Connor proved that if you got him on your bench, well, if you got him on the ice, not just on the bench stuff, you do have a chance. And uh, he, uh, he just towered above this game with every shift, it seems like. So that's a big boost for the team. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to win the next five in a row against 100 point teams, but I do say that they're going to go into those games feeling a lot better about their chances to beat those teams. None of these confidence destroying getting beat every time they play a good team, right?
I'm going to go with yes as well, Bruce, because a couple of really key players, Puljujärvi and Ratti, both got off the schneid. Yep. And looked really good all game long. They finally seem to figure out three lines that work, three top lines that work, which is a dramatic change. If that can continue and those lines can keep doing what they're doing. And we'll see what happens on the defense with the third pairing. But that's a relatively easy fix. And the good news is that the top two pairings and Cam Talbot, there was a few iffy moments with Talbot, but overall, the top two defensive pairings in Talbot were also strong. So there's just a lot of – turns out there's a few up arrows on this team right now. So from doom and gloom to optimism all in one night. Bruce, thanks for talking tonight.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.